Chapter 82. The Mystery of the Missing Bells. The British Museum has been described as the biggest building site in Europe, and they had only finished its new white wing a year or so ago, but even then, I had read, it struggled to house the vast quantities of antiquities flooding in from every corner of the empire. I am ashamed to say that I had never troubled to visit it, and we had only a glimpse of the roof today, for Mr. Captain Bligh lived in a neat terraced house at the Bloomsbury Street end of Great Russell Street, furthest away from Tottenham Court Road. "I shall answer it," we heard being called, and the householder himself responded to my knocks. Despite being, as my guardian had informed me on the way, nearly 80 years old, Mr. B. seemed in robust health, straight-spined and solidly built, with a florid complexion, and a handshake too strong for my, until recently, pain-free fingers.
"You will take tea?"
he offered after the introductions.
"What sort?"
Sidney Grice asked suspiciously while wiping his hand.
"Nepal."
He had a good head of wild, peppery hair and whiskers to rival those of an unsheared ram.
"That is acceptable."
Mr. Bligh ushered us into a cosy sitting room, with deep armchairs of crumpled leather and books stacked in multiple columns and pyramids on the floor.
"I see time has not mellowed you, Mr. Grice."
I smiled. "Not that I have noticed."
"Little girls very rarely notice anything beyond the fashion plates."
Mr. Bligh rummaged about in his beard. "I would not know." I picked up a leather-bound book with gold lettering on the cover, not having socialized with many little girls since I was one myself.
"When the criminals of this world bask in gentleness and benignity, I might follow suit."
Mr. G. snatched the book from me. "I doubt it," I said, stung by his failure to defend me. Mr. Bligh strode into the hall and boomed out,
"Tea!"
"Is your bell not working?" I asked.
"I do not like bells."
Our host delved back into his whiskers.
"I cannot have one in the house."
"Why is that?" I asked.
"Because I do not like them,"
he said slowly and indulgently. Mr. G. rolled his eye.
"Miss Middleton does not listen."
"I wondered why you do not like them," I tried to explain.
"Because I cannot have one in the house."
Mr. Bligh was markedly less patient this time. He jumped onto a hefty brown tome to increase his height advantage over us both.
"You will recall, unless you have subsided into senility,"
my guardian clipped on his pince-nez and opened the tome,
"the outbreak of scrotal carcinoma at University College Hospital in 78.
Mr. Captain Bligh broke in.
"I am not likely to forget that." "Unless you have subsided into senility."
Mr. G. immersed himself in the book. "Can one of you enlighten me?" I inquired.
"I am not sure,"
Mr. Bligh replied,
"given your inability to grasp the idea that I do not like bells and cannot have them in the house."
"Please try." I resisted the urge to stand on a book myself, as I felt sure I should be scolded if I did. There were 6 carriage clocks on the mantelshelf, all ticking, but each set 5 minutes earlier than the one to its left, the one furthest to the left being about 3 hours fast.
"They are clocks,"
Sidney Grice responded to my puzzled gaze.
"It is a short and simple story, and not worth sitting down for."
Mr. Bligh jumped off his dais.
"Is that the only reason you have come here?"
"Yes,"
Sidney Grice said, before I could concoct an account of having long been anxious to meet the famous surgeon.
"In that case..."
Captain Bligh marched back to the hall and bellowed,
"No tea, and hurry!"
Before taking centre stage again on the hearthrug.
"There was an outbreak of inflamed crusty growths of the scrotums of all our patients in St. Agatha Ward. Mr. Lamb was in charge, and he diagnosed it as carcinoma. An ex-sweeps boy suffered, as they are prone to do, from the affliction, and Lamb subscribed to the unpopular theory that certain types of cancers are transmittable and that the only cure was surgical excision before the whole body was affected."
"Castration," I clarified.
"Castration,"
Mr. Bligh clarified for my benefit,
"if you know what that means.
I used to help at a farm, I said, and he looked at me pityingly.
I am sure that you were very good at planting potatoes.
It was sheep, I corrected him, and he sniggered.
Have some sense, child.
Bly took his fingers for a walk through his side whiskers.
You cannot plant sheep.
I would not have minded planting him at that moment.
Whilst we are on the subject of things ovine, Mr. G said urgently, would this even more than usually incompetent surgeon Lamb be Mr. David Anthony Lamb?
He penciled a footnote and turned the page.
I am not sure about the Anthony.
Mr. Bly wandered to the hearth to rattle the fire irons.
One can never be sure about Antonys,
Sidney Gryce pronounced sadly. Were all the patients emasculated? I asked, not sure if the conversation was leading anywhere.
What on earth does she mean?
Bly grasped the poker like a storybook illustration of a householder confronting a burglar, and I winced, for I had been attacked with one of those before, and still suffered occasional headaches.
Perhaps I should rephrase that.
My guardian eyed me reprovingly.
Miss Middleton was wondering if all the patients were emasculated. All bar the sweep.
Mr. Bly drove the poker into the unlit coals.
He escaped by climbing out of a window.
And what happened to him? I asked. And Mr. Bly made an uff noise.
He escaped by climbing out of a window.
After that, I tried again.
Yes.
He made no attempt to hide his irritation this time.
After that, he escaped by climbing out of a window. Do you know what happened to him subsequent to his escape?
Sidney Gryce tore the bottom paragraph off a page and held it up like a manifesto. Mr. Captain Bly extracted the poker in a decidedly Arthurian manner.
I would have told you if your idiot girl hadn't kept pestering me to repeat myself. Is she deaf?
He raised his voice.
Are you deaf?
As a dog, I replied.
Many dogs have excellent hearing,
he told me. Unless they are deaf, I quipped, uncertain how I had got into this squabble.
What was the ultimate fate of the sweep?
Mr. G asked, and Captain Bly resheathed his weapon in the stand.
How in the name of Cosmos, Luke and Damien, should I know that?
I think you mean names, I muttered.
But,
Mr. Bly condensed to tell us,
he was re-diagnosed when he was put into Lister Ward with a fractured pelvis from falling out of the window, as having a bad case of crusted scabies, which, as you, but not your mentally retarded ward, will know, is highly contagious. It transpired that a trainee nurse, who was Irish and a Roman Catholic and therefore afraid of dirty bits, had given all the patients a wash down there.
He pointed as if she had carried out the task in his cellar.
With the same flannel.
And was he cured? I was almost flattered that he felt no need to explain to me what a flannel was.
You cannot cure a broken pelvis, which is...
The hip bone, I chipped in.
The hip bone,
he informed me.
You just have to hope it heals itself.
Did the other patients ever find out about Lamb's mistake?
Mr. G replaced the torn-out paper upside down.
Many did,
Mr. Bly told him.
It was supposed to be hushed up, but the nurse confessed to anyone who would listen, and many who would not. Lord above knows why, but she blamed herself.
Catholics are trained to feel guilty,
Sidney Gryce remarked,
especially the Hibernians.
It is in their blood,
Bly corrected him. You are probably thinking of poteen. I chipped in to blankness. Could you inquire of your friend if any of the patients took legal action? I asked my guardian, and he did.
Some of them threatened to sue, but they would have got nowhere.
The surgeon grasped his own lapels.
Goodness me, if a doctor is not allowed to make mistakes, who is?
Nobody, I guessed, and picked up a slender blue volume.
We are not talking about nobody.
Mr. Bly stamped his foot.
It is only through making mistakes that medicine makes advances.
Not through research and careful observation? I glanced at the title, Cheeky Maids Love to be Spanked, and wondered if Molly would agree, and, seeing that the old surgeon had no intention of responding, asked, Where would the records of those cases be kept now?
Mr. G was wiping his hands on a green handkerchief, decorated with images of leaping red ponies.
They would be kept in the hospital records.
Mr. Bly put on a pair of smoked spectacles.
And are they?
Mr. G shook out his handkerchief, making the ponies prance playfully round their field.
No.
I glimpsed myself in the surgeon's blanked-out eyes.
Perhaps for Miss Middleton's benefit, you could elucidate.
Mr. G mopped his forehead, though the room was on the chilly side.
Very well.
Bly felt his way forward in a manner similar to my godfather's crossing of the beam in Steep House.
I shall explain in the simplest possible terms, and in order to hold her fleeting attention, in the style of a brief anecdote.
He bumped into a low, square table, upsetting a pillar of journals.
After the possibility of a misdiagnosis came to light, Mr. Lamb took all the patient's medical notes to check through them, but had them stolen on the way home, and so the hospital lost all records of the names and addresses of all the patients.
How unfortunate, I said.
How should I know how unfortunate it was?
Mr. Bly rubbed a barked shin.
I only know that the hospital authorities were not very happy, and that Mr. Lamb retired, probably worn out by all the other complaints against him.
Do you know what they were about? I asked. Mr. Bly glowered at me.
You have not understood a single word I said, have you?
I tried one more tack. If the sweep was in Lister Ward, surely they must have made their own records.
Oh, for heaven's sake!
Bly grabbed hold of his own hair.
It goes without saying that he was deaf and dumb, which, I had better explain, means he could neither hear nor speak. We only knew him as Sweep, and we called him that because he used to be one. Otherwise, we would have called him something else.
Like Baker, I suggested, and Mr. Bly threw back his head like a wolf at the moon, but, I was disappointed to find, did not howl.
No, not Baker. He was a sweep, a sweep, a sweep, a sweep. How many more ways can I say it?
You have only said it one way but four times, I argued.
It is time to go,
Mr. G spun on his heel. Can you explain about the bells again? I asked meekly, as my godfather headed for the door. The surgeon stumbled onto his knees over a footstool.
Bother!
He picked himself up.
I sometimes wonder why I wear these things.
Goodbye, Mr. Captain Bly.
Sidney Grice waved, like a signalman, trying to flag down a train in an emergency, and, when we were outside, he explained,
Mr. Captain Bly does not like bells, and, incidentally, when I talked about the criminals of this world basking in gentleness and benignity, I have no serious expectations of that happening.